Yeah, you know how to do it.
Just before we begin the next sugya, I wanted to share a thought that came to me during the course of the day in Purim that's relevant to Megillah and relevant to some of the shiur that we spoke about in the past. So I don't consider myself to be anywhere near the Vilna Gaon in the following sense. I used to say from the Vilna Gaon that he would sometimes get like a flash of Divrei Torah or something in the middle of davening, so he would never say over that Divrei Torah. He felt like he came in the middle of davening, so my stomach's not, can't be so good. So here, I was mentioning the middle of reading the Megillah, and that was the Bakari. I was in the middle of reading the Megillah, and all of a sudden I read these stuff, and I said, oh my goodness, that's the Pshat and the Sukkah. I didn't say that literally, it would have been after. But it all of a sudden dawned on me. So there's a whole series of Sukkah at the end of the Megillah. So Mamash is thinking that we've been talking about in the last couple of weeks. The Megillah speaks about after the whole event happened, so then the Chacham should also adore, was led by Mordechai, begin to institute the Yom before. It's not the part that you're telling me, that's a different part. It's a good part. So the Pesukim say, the Mordechai sends messengers to everybody, Lekayim, Aleim, Yos Osim, they should have the 14th day and the 15th day, details, and Kayomim, Be Mishne, Vesimcha, Vesloch, all the mitzvahs of Yom and everything. And it says, and Klai Yisrael accepted, Vekibok, HaYehudim, everyone accepted and tried. And then it says, Ki Haman Ben Amdos, Arat Sarek, HaYehudim. At that point, after it finishes telling you what happened, all of a sudden it tells us again, chazes over again, what the story of Purim was. We don't know what the story was. We already read the last 8 prachim. We know the story already. What is the purpose of that pasuk in this context? And also, the pasuk is a little bit superfluous. It says that Haman was the tzorek kol ha-yehudim, that he was the enemy of all the Yehudim. We didn't realize that he was the enemy of kol ha-yehudim, so they say in Purim Torah, they say in answer to the second kasha. They say that, this is not the word I'm going to say, they say that, the Chazal say that when you give a shevach about somebody, so when the person is in front of you, you're only supposed to say part of the shevach. If the person is no longer here, then you could say the entire shevach. So Haman's greatest shevach, he considered his greatest pride was that he hated all the Jews. So Kozban, that he was alive, so the Megillah said he was an enemy of Mordechai, an enemy of this or that. But after he died, then we could really say the greatest shevach about him, the Sarek HaLehud. That's the Purim term. But the real term is, I think, is as follows. That the Pesukim are describing the institution of the Yom Purim. So we already learned the whole sugya that whenever the Chacham institutes something, there's a basic condition that has to be met. You require Kabbalah Satibur. And if you don't have Kabbalah Satibur, if you don't have Pashto Barov Yisrael, then the Takana basically unravels. The Takana doesn't have any koyach. The basin can't act on their own. They can only act as representatives of the Tzibur. So that Pasuk is saying that the Kibbal Yehudim, that Mordechai establishes Yom Tovim, the Kibbal Yehudim, and Klai will accept the Purim. Which members of Christ will accept it? It couldn't have been just a few handful of people. A couple of Jews in Shushan, a couple of Jews here. That wouldn't have been Purim. That wouldn't have been at the Kohen Kodesh. That wouldn't have had the Koyach of the stamp of the Israel Gobel. It had to have all of Klal Yisrael. So that's what the Megillah reviews over and says. So talk about why did only Klal Yisrael buy into this? Because Haman was Tzorek Kol HaYehudim. Because at that point, all of Klal Yisrael realized that he was the enemy of all of us. If it would have been Haman was starting up with the Jews in Shushan, starting up with the Jews here, they wouldn't have been able to do Misak and Purim. The only thing that gave it the koyach of the takon of Purim was to be pushed to Merov Yisrael was the fact that Haman was not Tzorek Kol HaYehudim. That's what the Megillah goes out of its way to mention that. The only place in the Megillah where it says Tzorek Kol HaYehudim, daft in the context of the institution of the takon Sacham, because of all the sugars that we learned about, you require pushed to Merov Yisrael. So that thought came through the middle of the Megillah, so I figured I would share with you. Anyway, now we begin our sugars. So the basic theme that we've been discussing over the last couple of weeks is the notion of when you have a din, either din derais or din derabanan, is there any way whatsoever that that din may, in a sense, change? So the din deraisa can only possibly change either if there's some kind of a horah shah, there's some kind of emergency measure that Chazal have to temporarily suspend some kind of a din deraisa, that may be true. Or sometimes in the realm of, if it's a mitzvah saseh, so Chazal have a right to tell you, you shave al-tasa, don't blow the shofar, don't shake the lulav, etc. Or you could have a later bezin that could reevaluate the sugya and think maybe the previous bezin came to an erroneous conclusion. So sometimes they have the courage to do that. So even in the realm of dinam deraisa, you can theoretically have, we don't mean in the literal sense, change, but you can have something that at one time is being practiced one way, and then in theory could be changed by a later bezin. When it comes to din derabanan, then the rules are entirely different. When it comes to din derabanan, we had several weeks of shiurim about the koch of one bezin to uproot the previous bezin, go the koch of a minyan. Does the tam exist? Does the tam not exist? Many, many different factors that went into this discussion. But now we move on to a very much related topic about, is there a concept of a din derabanan that's set into place for a specific time? It means the Chachamim is sat in something under certain circumstances, and when those circumstances or when that time comes to an end, so then the din derabanan either disappears on its own, or the Din D'Rabbanan can easily be revoked. What exactly are the parameters of a Din D'Rabbanan that's clearly related to a very, very specific set of circumstances? So the sugya begins in the first of the Ramatamos, in the sugya that says Beit and Abdal of the days. But the Gemara is discussing the institution of 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. So of course we know that Min HaTorah, there's only one day of Rosh Hashanah, Mechodesh HaShvid, Yechad HaChodesh, no question about that. The first day of Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah. And yet, we have an age-old practice of having 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Where in the world did the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah come from? Why is it after 2 days? And it's different than regular Yom Tov She'ini, proof positive that it applies even in Eretz Yisrael, where we assume Halacha. So the Gemara discusses this institution of 2 days of Rosh Hashanah in the following very, very detailed context. Itmar. Shnei Yom Tovim Shel Rosh Hashanah, Rav Shmuel B'Yami Chavayu, Nolda Bazeh Asura Bazeh. Rav and Shmuel, rather than discussing a deep philosophic discussion about the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, they talk a very, very practical lemaisa. You have an egg that was laid on the first day of Yom Tov, Rosh Hashanah. Can you eat it on the second day or not? Why is that such an important question? Because that really gets to the heart, really gets to the root of what the essence of the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah are all about. The first Mishnah Masechet Beitza tells us, a Beitza Shenolda B'Yom Tov is also. An egg that was laid on Yom Tov cannot be in on that Yom Tov for a variety of reasons, either because of Muktzah, Dailah, other Dirabbanan. Half a dozen reasons why a Beit HaShenolda B'Yom Tov is Asur. First two blot of Masechet Beit deal with that topic. I remember when I was a little boy, so there was somebody in the community who was making a siyum in shul on Masechet Beit. So I remember I asked my father, what is Masechet Beit? Like, well, what was it all about? I know what a Beit was. Beit was an egg. So he said, yeah, well, it talks about an egg. It's passed out with an egg that was laid on Yom Tov. So I remember the person got up and he said, I've been learning Masechet Beit for like 2 years or something. And I'm making a siyum. I remember to myself, what is there to say about an egg? I mean, what can you possibly? Now I got a little bit older, I realized you can spend 1 or 2 years learning Masechet Beit. So in the beginning of Masechet Beit, the opening Mishnah is the Beit Shnolda of the Yom Tov is also. So the Gemara says, what if you have a Beit that's Nolda on the first day of Yom Tov? What's its status on the second day of Yom Tov? Leaving out Rosh Hashanah for a minute. The Yom Tov Shani Shagolias. So the Gemara says that the egg that was laid on the first day is Mutter on the second day. Why is that? Because no matter how you slice the 2 days of Yom Tov, they're not both Yom Tov. Either the first day is Yom Tov, or the second day is Yom Tov. So you have 2 days of Pesach. So we know that Pesach with Torah is one day, except we're just not sure. At least at one time they weren't sure when Rosh Chodesh was. So either Monday is Yom Tov, or Tuesday is Yom Tov. We don't know which is which. So if the egg is laid on Monday, you can eat it on Tuesday. Why be Manoshach? If Monday is the real day of Yom Tov, then Tuesday is Chol Hamoed. If Tuesday is the real day of Yom Tov, then it wasn't the Beit Shnol to the Yom Tov. It was the Beit Shnol to the Erev Yom Tov. So no matter which direction you turn, a Beit that was known on the first day of Yom Tov must by definition be permissible on the second day of Yom Tov. And here Rav and Shmuel tell us that in Rosh Hashanah everything is different. Why? When the Beit is known on the first day, you cannot eat it even on the second day, because the first day and the second day of Yom Tov Rosh Hashanah are not B'teres Sofek, it's B'teres Vaday. That the Halacha says that what we call in Halacha Kedusha Achas, or Yom Arichta, it's one long day. It's a 48-hour Yom Tov. So a Beit that's Nolda at 9 o'clock in the morning on the first day is also 2 o'clock in the afternoon on the second day, because at the Halacha that's considered to be one big day. That's the Chiddush of Rav and Shmuel. Unlike Yom Tovim Shel Golios, think of the Yom of Yom Tov Sheni, Yom Tov Rosh Hashanah is different. So the Gemara says, why is it different? Why in the world did Chazal institute Yom Tov Sheni of Rosh Hashanah in such a way that it's considered to be Kedusha Achaz? So it stems from back to the days of the Beis Hamikdash. This man, the Rishonayim Makabim Eis Hachodesh Kol Hayom. In the olden days, on Rosh Chodesh, for that matter, any Rosh Chodesh, but particularly the Rosh Chodesh of Tishrei, which is the most important for us, the halacha is that if Edom come and testify any time during the course of the day that they saw the new moon, we declare that day to be Rosh Chodesh, or we declare that day to be Rosh Hashanah. Now, in theory, we have a strange thing. It's 10 o'clock at night, and we don't really know whether it's going to be Rosh Hashanah or not. I guess we eat our apple misofek, I don't know if we eat our pomegranate, we eat our fish as misofek, but you don't really know. You wake up the next morning, and you don't really know, is it going to be Rosh Hashanah? We think it's going to be Rosh Hashanah, it's probably going to be Rosh Hashanah, but we're not really sure. So I guess you got to go to shul, go to daven, go through motions, blow shul, so go to tashta, hope for the best. 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Baruch Abba, they ate them, show up, and say today is Rosh Hashanah. Now we know we did was right. So we shouldn't get over-dramatized that. Because the Gemara says that the Rub of the time, the Edom came on the day. It means the odds that the Edom are not going to make wait until the next day that we're going to miss the new moon and that we blew shofar, everything was away, is very unlikely. It happened once in a long, long time. So most of the time we're home free. Most of the time when we start Rosh Hashanah, we start hit the nail on its head. But every once in a while you could have a problem. So in the olden days, the Edom could come any time of the day. They come 5 o'clock, a minute before Shkia, so we declare that the whole day retroactively was Rosh Hashanah and Shkia. But Pamachas, one time the following happened. Yishto Edom Lavo. Now one time it was late in the afternoon, it was 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 in the afternoon, the Edom hadn't shown up yet. And Beis Din Yerushalayim thought it's probably not going to come anymore. So they decided, you know what, it's probably not going to be Rosh Hashanah today. It's probably going to be a Yom Chol. And if it's a Yom Chol, it's time to bring the Korban Tomash Rabbeinu Abayim. And in the Korban Tomash Rabbeinu Abayim, on the Yom Chol, you sing a certain Shira, a certain Prophet of Tehillim. If it's Yom, then you sing other Prophet of Tehillim. So they assumed that it was going to be a Yom Chol, and they brought the Korban Tumah, and they sang the Shira for the Yom Chol, and there's Kalkol of Yimashir, and then it turns out that the Edom Tapa showed up. The Edom came out after the Korban was brought. So five minutes before Shkia, the Edom walk in, Baruch Abu. So then the Levium felt terrible, about we sang the wrong Shira. So Tais has a whole discussion, Asma. So they sang the wrong Shira, big deal. The Shira's not Machav, it's a Korban, the whole thing. We don't understand what was the big tragedy was. But whatever it was, there was some kind of major tragedy, they sang the wrong Shira. So the Chachamim was so concerned that this shouldn't happen again, they made the following Takoda. They made a takana that we will no longer accept Edom after the Korban Tumah is brought. So 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, if the Edom hadn't showed up at that point, then we no longer will accept him anymore. And once the Edom will close the door, the Edom are screaming, here's the moon, it doesn't matter. The Edom doesn't accept the Edom, so if he did, the Kiddush HaChodesh doesn't happen. And it turns out that really the next day is going to be Rosh Hashanah. So now, how does that play out, Lamaisa? So imagine a typical year in the days of the Beis HaMikdash. So comes the what's in theory going to be Aleph Tishrei, we don't know. Today was Chavtes Elul, so tonight is theoretically Aleph Tishrei, to be determined tomorrow. So it comes the night time, we declare it's probably going to be Rosh Hashanah, we don't know. Most probably will be, so we daven Ma'ariv for Yom Tov, everyone goes home, eats the fish heads, everyone wakes up in the morning early to daven, we say the Sana Teksa, playing it out for us. It played the whole day out. It's 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, and all of a sudden, we're looking around, we realize we have our time to bring the Korban Mincha, and there's still no Edom. So we realize that Takatei was not Rosh Hashanah. It was all a waste. We basically spent the whole day, it was really the last day of Elul. Turns out, Lemafreir, retroactively, it wasn't Rosh Hashanah. So now what do you do? So Min HaTorah, what you do is, tell everybody to go back to work. Have a few more hours to chop around to go back to work. Tomorrow, tonight's going to be the real Rosh Hashanah. That's the Dibnid Deraisa. Because once we come to the realization that we're closing up shop in the Beis Din, we're never going to accept the Edom, so then it will not be Rosh Hashanah, no matter what happens. But the Chazal were very, very concerned about that. Because, basically you're going to tell the Oyelim, you're going to tell the regular Pashas, the people, that, oh, today was a shut all morning, they were screaming and crying, and Minchayz of a Tshuva, and you're in Shaifer and everything. And then 3 o'clock in the afternoon, okay guys, you go back to work, get a few hours left to work. So that'll be a big zilzal next year. What's going to happen next year? Next year, the rabbis are going to say, okay, today's Rosh Hashanah. Yeah, we heard that one last time. And everyone's going to go to work. No one's going to take Rosh Hashanah seriously. And then the Edom will come in time, and it'll turn out everyone's Mechal Yantav. So Chazal had to think a million times, even though Min HaTorah, you should just call today, waste the day. We basically had a Rosh Hashanah Vatala. Tomorrow will be the real day of Rosh Hashanah. So Chazal were very concerned. They didn't want to do that. So what they did was, Nogin Oso Yom Kodesh L'Macha Kodesh. Therefore, they made a takana that we're going to finish off the day of the Kedusha. We're going to make believe for the next 3 hours, even though we know in our heart of hearts it's not Rosh Hashanah. We're going to play it out as if it's Rosh Hashanah. And then, of course, tomorrow is going to be the real Rosh Hashanah. So it turns out that even this Manche Beis HaMikdash HaKayim, in the Beis HaMikdash itself, you had a situation called 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. But the reason for the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah was not the Teres Suffolk. It wasn't like Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. It was the Teres Vaday. We know that the first day is a joke. We know the first day is not really true. And we're still going to keep it as Kodesh. So you see the Chazal made a takon across the board called 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. It was the takon of the Teres Vaday. And therefore, Rav and Shmuel say, Nolda Bazeh, Sura Bazeh. That was the razzle dazzle. That was the lumdus of Nolda Bazeh, Sura Bazeh. So comes Rabbah, and now gets to the part that's relevant for us. I'm a Rabbah. Mitakanas of Yechem and Zakai, the Eilach Beis Muteris. This man, Mishachar Beis Mikdash, his kin of Yechem and Zakai, Shumakab, and Yitzchak Chodesh Kalayom. So comes Rabbah and says, after Rabbi Yechem and Zakai, namely after the Beis Mikdash was destroyed, this din doesn't apply anymore. Why? Because the whole reason that they had 2 days, Rosh Hashanah, Bitaras Vadai, was only because of this fear the Edom are going to come late, and we won't accept them. That was true when there was a Beis HaMikdash, because we don't want to accept the Edom after the Mincha is brought. Bisman is there. There's a korban. There's no Beis HaMikdash anyway. There's no korban tumah anyway. So let the edim come. It's 5 to 6. What's the big deal? So Bisman is there. Rabbi Yochanan Zaka made a takana. We will accept the edim. He revoked the previous takana not to accept the edim. So comes Rab and says, since in the days of the korban now, we no longer practice the din of not accepting the edim, so the whole issue of the beitza, which was a result of that previous historical phenomena, also falls by the way. So that was Rab's analysis. So comes the second of Marmakomos. The Gemara gets a little bit into the sidetrack. The father, the Gemara says in the second of Marmakomos, Rav Yosef Amenu. Rav Yosef said, "Afi takanas of Yech ben Zaka ve'elach beitz asura," that the beitza remains also even today. Why? The original reason for the takana doesn't exist anymore. The whole rationale that is null and void. My timer says, "Rav Yosef, avidovish beminyan, v'chol dovish beminyan, tzach minachelat tiroi." But Yosef says, once a Dovash HaMinyan, Dovash HaMinyan means it was made by a Beis Din, there was a gathering, there was a vote, and there was a Takanas HaChomim to create a certain Isser, that Isser remains the Olam Void, unless it's revoked by a later Beis Din, which it in fact never was, Tzarech Minyanach Ala Tiroi, and the Isser doesn't disappear into thin air. Even though the whole reason for the Isser was based on the fact that we weren't accepting the Edim, that phenomena has changed, and the Isser and the Beis still remains. That doesn't make any sense. The beitza is also, but the whole reason for the beitza being also doesn't exist anymore. That's the chiddush of the halacha. Dovash of minyan tzarech minyan achalat tiroi. How did Rav Yosef know such a thing? That the takanas hacham remains in effect, even though the reason is long gone. Rav Yosef ben Ami, Lod Chsiv, Leichem Olam Shuvu Lachem La Leichem, V'yomer B'mshecha Yevel Heimeyalu Bahar. There are two psukim in the context of Matan Torah that seem to be superfluous. First, the Torah says back in Parshas Yisro that the 3 days leading up to Mamet HaSinai, Altikshul Isha. So the husbands weren't permitted to do with their wives to make sure no one would be tummy, the women wouldn't be pulled up to Shabbos. There was a whole sugya for the Shabbos. That was clearly as a preparation for Matan Torah. It is pretty obvious that once the Torah was given, that Isha should disappear. The whole reason for not being with their wives was a hachana for Matan Torah. Matan Torah is over, go back to your wives. So the Torah had to say it explicitly. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu Pashas Baschanan, Leichem Olam, Shuvu Lechem Yoleichem. Go back to your tents, go back to your wives. Why did the Torah have to say it? It sounds like if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have been mocked that quote unquote gezeir, funny term to use, but if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have been mocked that previous Isser, the Isser would have remained in full force, even though the whole background, the whole reason clearly knows no longer relevant. Or similar, the Torah says in Parshas Yisro that Kol's Mount of Teshchina was on Mount of Sinai, you're not allowed to climb. Losiga b'yad, you're not allowed to touch the mountain, you're not allowed to climb the mountain. A man, an animal, no one's allowed to go anywhere near Sinai. And then it says at the end, and when you hear the shofar blowing at the end of Mount of Sinai, then you're allowed to go back to the mountain. So ask the Gemara on the Pasuk in Parshas Yisro, why did that Kadosh Baruch Hu have to save a favorish after you hear the shofar, when you see Matan Torah is over, then you can go back? What was the Halamina Shabbat Halamina? The whole reason why you can't go on the mountain is because the Shechin is there. Once the Shechin is not there, so for Shechin, you're allowed to go on the mountain. What's the Shalah? So comes Rav Yosef as the Daik from Tupsukim and Matan Asin. Again, this is not Dinim Derabonim. This is a Kadosh Baruch Hu making quote unquote Gezeris. And Kadosh Baruch Hu said, you can't go on the mountain, you can't be with your wives. These are all things which were only true because of Matan Asin. And if not for the fact that the Torah went out of its way to be mocked to them, it would have remained the Isura. Once the Isura is instituted, it remains until there's a Dabra Matir. So Rav Yosef extrapolated from this and says, you learn from here a Din L'Dayris, that whenever the Chachamim make a Gezeira, the Gezeira remains in status unless it's actually revoked. You don't say that since the reason disappears, the Isura disappears, that's not true. It remains in status, the other void, unless it's going to actually be revoked. So comes Tosfos in the third of the Marmakamas and raises the question, what are the parameters of this halacha that we follow Rav Yosef, that Dabash and Indian Tzarech and Minyak Latirei? So says Tosfos, Yesha Yerotzen Lomo Mikan, there were those who wanted to suggest, some of the Rishonim wanted to suggest the following, to Osen Charamos She Osen Muzman At Pesach O At Zman Acher, to Chiyagi Azman Tzarech Minyan Lahatres Acherim, Abba Bisha Obra Azman. So there used to be a practice, we still have people who claim they're making charama, but most people, we don't have too many charama as much as that. But in the olden days, so the days in a certain koach, they would make a charam basically meant a curse. They would say that whoever's going to violate the following edict should be cursed. That's the lashon of a charam, like a destruction. So the Beis Din has the koach to make charamim, to put people into chayrim, to create isurim and charamim, not to do certain things. So they used to have a practice. Let's say there was a certain thing the Beis Din felt was a necessity for that community to make a certain chayrim, to take, in a sense, like a shvu, like they would, the whole community would sign on to this curse. They're not going to do the following action. But they didn't want to make the curse of the Olam Vod. They made it until Pesach, until Shavuos, whatever, until Sukkot, whatever it was, whatever the Zman, the end of the summer, whatever they made the chayrim for. And they wrote a specific time into the text of the chayrim. So there was some who wanted to say that even when the time ends, the chayrim still exists. You have to be matir the chayrim. How do you matir the chayrim? You have to go to a Beis Din. It's the Beis Din has to be matir the chayrim. The same way Pesha also Peshit, the Beis Din made the chayrim. The Beis Din has to be matir the chayrim. So comes Tosfos and says, there are those who said that even though the time has already elapsed, that's irrelevant. Just as the Gemara says that a gezeir of the Beis Din HaGadol, the time elapsing or the reason elapsing doesn't make a difference. Just as the takana, the gezeira, so to speak, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not to climb in Har Sinai, and not to be with one's wife before the time of Mamon Har Sinai, required a special matir. It didn't just disappear into thin air. So to the charamim, which were signed on to a specific time, would also require a special heter. So Taisa says, Tarei Hacha, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hasam Tashrish, from Matan Tarim, Remeli Adina, Zakash HaShiyam, Nid Eterim Utarim, Yaf HaPichin, Hita Lehem. So Taisa says that whole lumdus is not correct. Below, he says Taisa, that these Rishonim, the Yesha Erotzim Loma, which happens to be a Rashi, a Sechzad Hedrin that says this, but the Yesha Erotzim Loma were not correct because they extended this Gemara way too far. The Hocha ain't can shum zman to cry in the Chonu Lesosas Yomim has been atbechem ledava shiyah Lesosas Yomim. Said Taisa, if you look carefully at the Pesukim of Bereshis Yisrael, it never says beferish that you have to stay away from your wives only for 3 days. There was no time limit put on it. The Pesuk says, get ready for Mamon Har Sinai, because in 3 days from now there's going to be Mamon Har Sinai. But it never worded the Lashon Issa for 3 days. So says Taisus, if the wording of the Isser was the Stam, even though we all know why the Isser was, there's no great secret why they couldn't be with their wives, there's no great secret why they couldn't climb on Har Sinai, but it wasn't said to Farish. Kozman, that the time limit wasn't put into the Gezerah proper, that's when the Gemara's din kicks in of Tzorach Binyan Achilat Tiroch. But if the original Beis Din spelled out and says, we are hereby making a Tachana, we're making a Cher, making a Gezerah, until the year Tavshanayin Hay, when Tavshanayin Hay comes, the Gezerah is gone, finished. Kamarnu, there's no need to be mat the Cher, no need to be mat the Yisr. So Taisus ultimately rejects the first opinion. The first opinion says that under all circumstances, whether there is a time limit, not a time limit, any time an utterance is made by a Beis Din, you can't just ignore that utterance. That Gezerah doesn't become bottled by itself unless there's an official revoking of the Gezerah. And Taisa says no. Taisa says that if the time is built into the Takon, into the Chayim, into the Gezerah, when the time ends, so then the entire Gezerah falls by the wayside. When is this relevant for us, this discussion? We don't have too many Charam v'zman hazeh. We don't have Divin of Mamon Har Sinai anymore. There's no way to go in the mountains anymore. Chesh Baruch was Matzah. We wouldn't even know where the mountain was if we wanted to. So what is this? How does this speak to us? The Beit Shnol B'Yomtev. We don't have too many Beit Shnol B'Yomtev. This man is there. Most of us are our hens. What relevance at all does this have to us? This notion that a Gezerah is made, a Tekon is made, a Chayim is made, and the Chayim may disappear by itself and may not. So in Shulchan Aruch, probably the most famous discussion about this topic is concerning the Chayrim of Rabbeinu Gershom, the most famous Chayrim that was made since the days of the Gemara. In the Rambam, recorded many times, the Rambam in his Akzom to Pesha Mishnayis explains that all the dinim that appear in the Gemara, all the maskanas of the sugyas in the Gemara, were all dinim that were ultimately agreed upon by all the Chachmei Yisrael. But says the Rambam, many takanas and charam and gezeiros and siyagim were instituted after the days of the Gemara, because historically there was no real central authority for the last 1500 years. So you had certain gezeiros that were made in certain communities, they were binding the members of those communities that accepted those yisurim, were binding them, those who didn't accept it weren't. So we know that the Ashkenazi communities by and large accepted not to eat kidneys in Pesach. So most of the Sephardi communities never accepted it, so they're allowed to eat kidneys. There are things the Sephardi accepted that the Ashkenazi didn't accept. Kaina v'chaina. So perhaps the most famous one was the Chayim of Rabbeinu Gershom. The Rabbeinu Gershom made a Chayim, a curse, and a Shvua, a Gezeira, whatever you want to call it, that all the members of the Ashkenazi communities who bought into this Chayim would not marry two wives. You know, again, technically speaking, in the Torah, this was permissible, even though it was clearly not something that was recommended. You don't have to go too far in Chumash to realize that every time the Torah describes someone who has two wives, there's always problems. There's a reason why two wives in halacha called tsaros zulazu, because that's pretty much what it brings about, is tsaros zulazu. So clearly the Torah tells us stories about this one who had two wives and there was a tsaros, and this was a tsaros, and this was a fight, and this was a right. So the Torah is trying to get across the message to us that this is not the correct, the optimal way of doing things. But the mice of the Torah permits it. That's the bottom line, the Torah permits it. And the Gemara never asked it either. Even though if you look in the Gemara, it's, you make a husband, there were very, very few on the run who actually had two wives. So it wasn't such a prevalent custom, even in the days of the Gemara. But technically speaking, it's Mukkah. So came along with a Gershom in the year 1000 or so. He was the Rebbe of Rashi's Rebbeim. So there were two generations before Rashi, and he basically, with his Beis Din, which was the primary authority in Germany, all the Ashkenazi Jews at that time, he made a Cheirim that you're not allowed to marry two wives. And that Cheirim was Poshta in all the Ashkenazi communities, and it was not accepted in the Sephardic communities. So comes the Rishonim, come a group of Rishonim, and have the following tradition. They claim that Rabbi Gershon's Cheirim was not made forever and ever. It was made for a very specific amount of time. Until what's called, the Rishonim use the term, Atof Elef HaChamishi, until the end of the year, basically to the year 5000. So we're in 5773, so the Cheirim was made until the year 5000, which was 773 years ago. But what year was that? I think, I tried to do the math in my head as I was driving, I think it's 1240 if I'm not mistaken. I figured out, I think the year 1240. That was the year that the Cheirim of Rabbi Gershon, according to the whole group of Rishonim, officially ran out. What do you mean officially ran out? There was a Beis Din in the year 1240 that sat down and was involved with the Gezerah. So the Chara, according to Tosfos, you don't have to do that. According to Tosfos, if the Cheirim was actually made Lizman, if there was a built-in time into the Cheirim itself, so then it disappeared to thin air in the year 1240. According to the Yesh HaYeretzim, if the first day in Tosfos is correct, that even a Cheirim Lizman requires a Heter, then the only way to say that the Cheirim is no longer binding is to say that there was an official Beis Din that was Matzah. So we don't have any record of any official Beis Din being Matzah. We assume that there was no official revoking the Gezerah. It was not necessary to revoke it. It just disappeared by itself. So this idea that the Cheirim ben Gershom was over in the year 1240, this is something that appears in the Rivash and the other Rishonim. Shulchan Aruch quotes this idea that the Cheirim was in fact gone, bezman hazeh. The Rishonim then write that there was after the Cheirim was over in the year 1240, then the Ashkenazi communities realized that it wasn't such a bad idea in the first place, so let's be knowing it again. Let's revamp the Kapitah of Cheirim, but Kapitah of Minach. It means it's a lower level of halacha, that all the Ashkenazi communities re-accepted this hakhon of Rabbi ben Gershom, even though the original formal chair of his Beis Din was terminated, but the minute became prevalent again. And that's why Ad HaYom HaZeh, we still follow this formal chair of Rabbi Gershom. Whether the original chair is intact, or the later minute is intact, whatever you want to call it, the bottom line is nobody in Ashkenazi communities would ever dare of tampering with this Isser Rabbi ben Gershom, even though, technically speaking, maybe the original tekan was actually over. So notwithstanding the fact that the Rivash writes this and the Devar Parsha that the Cheirim of Ben Gershom is technically over Bizman Hazeh, so the Mishkenes Yaakov has a tshuva much, much later, in the 1800s, he was a Talmud of Chaim Volozhin, where he writes that he's not convinced that other Rishonim bought into this. He thinks that other Rishonim thought that Cheirim of Ben Gershom is still very much alive and well. That the original Takana, this idea that it was only made to the Sof Elef HaChamishi, doesn't exist. How did the Mishnah Yaakov know this is true? So there's a major machlokes of Rishonim that appears in Masechet Yevamos about how would the Cheirim of Rabbeinu Gershom play out in a situation of Yibum. Let's say you have a Reuven is married and he dies without any children, so his wife falls for Yibum and Chalitza to the brother, to Shimon. Happens to be Shimon's married already. So what's the din? So is Shimon permitted to do Yibum? By doing Yibum, if he'd end up in effect taking a second wife. So we as Ashkenazim anyway don't do Yibum for other reasons as well as that. But in theory, if Shimon would want to do Yibum, would we permit that or not? So there was a big machlokes of Rishonim. So some of the Rishonim said, it's a Cheirim de Ben Gershom. How can you possibly do Yibum? Finish, it's over. You can't do Yibum. You're forced to do Chalitza if you're married. And other Rishonim say no. Other Rishonim say that the Cheirim of Ben Gershom was never made by Makom Mitzvah. That the Cheirim of Ben Gershom was made, he shouldn't marry somebody for no reason, but here it's not Makom Mitzvah, so he never made the Gzeira. Other Rishonim, the Ritvon, Yevamos writes, that the Cheirim was, you are not supposed to go in and take a second wife. I didn't take the second wife. Rav Shalom sent the second wife. But the Gemara uses the law, Isha Hikmi Loman HaShemayim. So he was given the second wife already. The Yevamah is already like she's married to him. So for a variety of reasons, the Rishonim debate whether the Cheirim is valid or not. When we have a practice, when we do a Chalitza B'Zman HaZeh, So we never do Yibum anyway, but we want to make sure that the Yavam understands that in theory he could do Yibum. So we have a practice that we're Mata the Chayrim at the time of the Chalitza. That we say to the Yavam, we say to him, listen, in theory, even though you're married, we're not going to talk about the legal dimensions of this, secular wise, but even though you're married, and even though in the normal circumstances, Ashkenazi communities, it was unheard of to take a second wife, we are hereby telling you that if you would want to take a second wife, we would Mata the Chayrim right now. Chayrim B'Yanishim doesn't exist for you. You can take a second wife. And then we say to him, listen, you're doing chalitza anyway, so don't even think you're going to take a second wife. So there's a big, big running machlekes of Yishayin, and what's the din of Yibum in a situation of Chayim de Benegeshim. So comes the Mishpas Yachim and says, he's going to do his homework, he's going to look up his history books. The Rishonim who discussed this topic lived after 1240. The Mordechai lived after 1240, after the Sof Alav HaChamishi. So ask the Mishpas Yachim, understand, if the Rivash was right, that the Chayim was over already, it was history, it was past history, how come nobody said this? How come when the Rishonim were fighting it out, about pages and pages in the Mordechai, about the Nidu, Yibum, and Mokam, Chayim de Benegeshim, how come nobody mentioned the fact that the Chayim doesn't exist? So he says, because the answer is it's not true, the whole Rivash is not true, that the Chayim was in full force. So in the middle of this long Shulchan Aruch and my Mokam number 4, I put the Maror Mokam on, and then I realized that I really only wanted the Shulchan Aruch part. The problem is the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, every line of the Shulchan Aruch is a Ramah, is a Shulchan Aruch. So it came out such a mishkabat, it's hard to find out the lines that I wanted in this. But somewhere in the middle of this, so it says, see if I can find it. See if I can find where that one line was. So first the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Machlek is when the Chaim applies the Machlek Mitzvah. And then, if you take a look at the first one line is Lahachmir. It's 6 lines from the bottom. So Hechrim El Atzof El Bachamishi. So Shulchan Aruch quotes that opinion in the reverse, that the Chayim only was until the year 1240. The Rambam adds on, you come up with Muhammad Dinah Seyla Takana, Vahaminet Bimkoba Omeid, Ve'enos and Shtei Noshim. And he says, nobody would ever do this man as there. And if Rabbeinu Geshem didn't put you into Chayim, who put you into Chayim? Kitza, Lamai said, no one's going to actually do it. But the original Chayim may actually be over. That's at least Shulchan Aruch says. So Mishkas Yaakov claims it's not true. He says that according to all the Rishonim who discussed Chayim of Rabbeinu Geshem, Macham Yibam, we're assuming that the Chayim is in full force. What's the issue whether the Chayim is in force or not in force this man is there? So this is really the part that's relevant in terms of our discussion, in terms of bitul of takanas hachamim. So the Mishkas Yaakov suggests a phenomenal shot as to what exactly the Rishonim are arguing about. Should the Chayim have been limited or not? So you have to stop and ask ourselves, why in the world would Rabbeinu Geshem have put a time limit on the Chayim? Is it a good idea or is it a bad idea? If the Chayim makes sense, then make it forever. If the Chayim doesn't make sense, what do you wait? How can people in China get to the year 1240? All of a sudden, the year 1240, everyone's getting married, set the whole thing doesn't make any sense. Why in the world should Rabbeinu Geshem put a time limit on the Chayim? So says the Mishkas Yaakov, it goes back to the ABCs of everything we've been talking about this year, namely, what gives Rabbanim, what gives the Beis Din a right to make the Karnas, to make the Zeris, to make the Yodim? Who are we? The Torah says you have to keep the Mitzvah Torah. We all of a sudden start making a new Isurim. Who gives the right to make a new Isurim? So says the Mishkas Yaakov, first and foremost reason why we have a right to make Isurim is because Asus Yagla Torah. Because the Torah requires of us to protect the pre-existing dirim deraisa. Therefore, we can't move mukta gazer, you're going to do malacha, you can't eat chicken and milk gazer, you're going to eat balsa b'chalav. All these surim d'rabbanan that are b'toras gazera, that the Chum have absolutely free reign to do. They can make gazeras, they're supposed to make gazeras, we have to listen to those gazeras. That was what we spoke about back in the first year, back in September, the first sugyas of these series is, so we mentioned the fact that the Ramban Latoya writes, that when you have something which is the Torah's Gezerah, that's a double portion that of course Beis Din has the test to do. So comes the Mishkas Yaakov and says, what was the rationale for the Chayim de Benegeshim? What Gezerah exactly was this protecting? What Din D'Oraisa was this protecting? What was he trying to accomplish? What prompted Benegeshim to make the Gezerah, to make this Chayim? So the Mishkas Yaakov suggests that there are two fundamentally different ways historically to understand what was behind the story of Rabbeinu Geshem. Why did he make this idea? What prompted all the Chum and Ashkenaz communities to all of a sudden adopt this idea? So there are two radically different approaches to this. So one approach is that it was for pure halachic reasons, namely, it was to protect certain Yisurim. What possible Yisurim was it going to protect? What was wrong with leaving it the way it was for the last 3,000 years? So comes the Mishkas Yaakov and says, what happened was as follows. The Jews were in Golos, and things were getting bad, and Jews were moving around, and there was a lack of stability in Jewish communities, and it became very dangerous to have a situation where a person had two wives. Why is that? So the Gemara says in Masechet Yevamos, Lo yisa adam isha b'mdina zu, v'yelech yisa isha b'mdina cheres. Even in the old days, when a person had two wives, you had to make sure that you didn't have one wife in China and one wife in America. That would lead to a disaster. Because then you had people who were born from the same man, and nobody knew he was related to who? That's the Gemara says, Al Zenem Mola Arzima. Brothers are going to marry sisters, no one knows who's related to who. So therefore, in the olden days, Chazal were able to control it. So they said, just be careful. But this man Azen, the days of Rabbi Gershom, he came to the realization that it's not controllable anymore. You have the Jews that are constantly being thrown out, they're thrown from Germany to France to England, all over the place. So if a person is going to have more than one wife, it's going to lead to a tremendous michshol in the realm of Yuni Arayas. And that was ultimately what prompted him to make this gezeira. So it was a gezeira b'taras yag, it was a sus yag l'tor, to prevent isum of Arayas and Mamzeiras. If that's the case, says the Mishkas Yaakov, if Rabbeinu Gershom made this as a gezeira to protect the pre-existing Nin Yaraisa, then he had every right, all the authority in the world to make this gezeira, and he could make this gezeira the Olam Vod. There is nothing stopping him from making this gezeira that it should remain forever and ever and ever. And just to put an arbitrary cutoff and say it was only for 200 years doesn't make any sense. Muktzah is forever, and Bas B'Cholav and Chitlin is forever, and this gezeira is also forever. What says the Mishnah Yaakov? Who says that's the reason why he made the Gezerah? If you look at other sources, they say the reason why he made the Gezerah was it had nothing to do with halachic reasons. It was, quote unquote, social reasons. Namely, people fighting, it was too much tzaras. Shaliyavu dektata. Rabbi Gershom realized, listen, it can't be anymore. There's too much fighting going on. Too many issues, too much kin, too much sin happening from people marrying to two women. Therefore, he put an end to it. It wasn't B'taras Gezerah, it was B'taras Gekulna, it was a Takona. It was a Takona Satsibor, it was Darke Shalom, it was Tikkun HaOlam, it was that kind of dinim. The Chum have the right to make those kinds of things also, but says the Mishnah Yaakov, Kozman, the Chum are not coming to protect the Din Yeraisa, they cannot make it permanent. They have to make a certain cap, they have to make a certain limitation on it. So Rabbeinu Gershom was bothered, how could I go ahead and make a Takona Satsibor to prevent fighting? I can't do that forever and ever and ever. I can make it for a certain amount of time. So if you were sitting in Germany in the year 1000 and trying to figure out what's the end game, how far? So on the one hand, Rabbeinu Gershom wanted it to be for a long time. He didn't want to make it to Tekon for 3 years. He wanted it to really kick in. On the other hand, he knew that he was limited in scope. He couldn't make it forever and ever. So he picked the number. What's the number? Havlof of dollars. It's the end of the millennium. The year 2000. So he picked the Torah year, the year 5000. So 1240 was the Sultan of Khamishi. The stomach was sitting in Germany in the year 1000 and thinking the stomach sheikh will come in the next 240 years. So the whole thing will, the things that will reevaluate in 240 years from now. And if not, so those guys, the year 1240 will come. So the Takana will be gone. So says the Mishkas Yaakov, the Machlekes of Yishayim, whether the Chayim was time bound or not, is a fundamental question that gets to the very heart of what koach the Chacham have, what's prompting them to make certain takonas. If the takonas is being made because gezeira, then they have free reign to do for even permanent. If the takonas is being done as a tikkun olam type of halacha, just the better society, then they have to be very, very careful not to institute something that's going to last forever. So the bottom line is that when you have a din derabanan, the starting point of the din derabanan is it's going to last forever. Whenever takonas Chacham is made, basically, unless you know to the contrary, tia for keeps. Unless another day is in revolt. 6 days in revolt. B'chof v'minyan, not b'chof v'minyan, pashtet takhanoso. Yichas dov, everything we spoke about in the last couple of shirim. Then you have this other possibility that Tosfos introduces, is that b'med v'memurim, that the din derabanan is here forever, that's only if it wasn't specified b'shas ma'isa, that it's here temporarily. But if it was specified b'shas ma'isa, it's here only for X amount of time, so when Pesach comes, the chayim is over. So now the question becomes, what prompts the Chachamim to sometimes specify time, and what prompts them to leave it unspecified? So says the Mishnah Yaakov, this is the key. And what was the purpose of the Takana in the first place? If the Takana was to protect the Din Yeraisa, that lasts forever. If the Takana was for some other external, social, economic, political, whatever other reason that the Chachamim felt that they have to step up to the plate and institute something, so that's also important. Beis Din has a role to do those kinds of things also. But that already does not become Torah forever and ever. That already is the Yesh Vuvudover. There's a time set on that. And when the time is set on that, so then it's quite possible, like Taisa said in Beitza, against the first day of Taisa's conclusion, is that those kind of Dinim Derabanan just disappear into thin air. So according to the way the Shulchan Aruch is quoting from the Rivash, the Chayim Rabbein Agesh and Mamash disappeared into thin air. It was made till the year 1240. 1240 came, it disappeared. Then there was a new couple, and there are more rights than Klai Yisrael and Ashkenazi communities revamped it and reaccepted it and made it Petaris Bini, okay, you can do whatever you want. You want to start the clock ticking over again, but the official Chayr of Bnei Gershom, according to the Shulchan Aruch, was over because it had to be over. It couldn't have been permanent because the Chazal never had, even Bnei Gershom never had the authority to make this Tekana forever and ever and ever. So I thought, but even within Dinim Derabanan, that sometimes are here forever, sometimes they change, so you have to always be to look back at it historically and figure out what prompted the Tekana in the first place. The Tekana B'Torah Siyav is one type of a Tekana, a Tekana Shlomo B'Torah Siyav is a radically different type of Tekana.